As we were saying, the Chinese population declined here in the 30s, was it 1933, right? The year that you came back.
Right. I think, let's say there were about, outside of our family, I imagine there would be about 20 Chinese left. The workers were very few and far between.
They're all workers and not families.
Just one family. The Chong family.
That's the
one that live in the LA area right now.
That was the one that had the candy store,
candy
right?
Right?
Later
right.
on.
Chong family. One, I think that some of the grandchildren are bringing LA water and power company now.
Okay, then this was about 1933, right?
Yeah.
And then your father lived about 3 or 4 years afterwards?
He passed away in 1936.
36.
Uh-huh. From an injury. He fell down one cold winter, December night. He fell down on the floor. He lived on the lower floor by himself. We lived upstairs. And we didn't find him the morning. He had fallen down and broke a rib and just laid on the floor, on the cold floor. And contracted pneumonia from which he died.
Mm-hmm.
After being in the hospital just a week.
So actually when the like the children, I mean like your brothers, your went to high school here and then you went into college, you went into the different cities like San Francisco, or you said one of them went to Chicago. And did most of your brothers or some of them return back to St. Louis Obispo, or just the two?
Actually, none of them came back. One was in Brother Fred. He went with the Ford Motor Company in Detroit.
Uh-huh.
He graduated as an engineer, you see, so he was in charge of the rubber tire. Ford was going to put out rubber tires. They were ready to put up a plant in Shanghai before the World War II was out. So he went in directly to the army from there. And then there was George, he was on an opium circuit, vaudeville circuit, after he left San Luis. That was his life, was the theatrical end. Brother Walt, he was a jeweler in San Francisco. That's the 33, he came back to San Luis and I helped out at the store. So he gave jewelry business at the time. And Sister Helen, she was in the theatrical business with my brother, George. She stayed back east and went to work in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And my oldest sister at the time, who was living, her husband had two big restaurants there in Chicago. The Bamboo Terrace and another one. And they were huge restaurants. I mean, they were seating 1,200 people. So at that, back in the Al Capone days.
Well,
the real bad, the real rough area.
During the Depression. And how long did those last?
Well, until the Depression. That took the pin top on that.
I see. And those restaurants had to close up.
Yeah, right. Went to a smaller, husband went to a smaller, not just a big scheme.
During the Depression, with all the holdings that your dad had, did he lose very much here in St. Louis?
Yeah, we had to lost quite a bit there, because he tried to hold on, you see.
Mm-hmm.
He never came back. He had bought a lot of equipment for the World War II. He has to go from farm to farm. He bought the big harvester machines, whereas you had 200 acres and he had 100 acres. And Jones would have 50 acres. But you couldn't afford to buy the machinery.
Mm-hmm.
My father bought the machinery. And then you go for your house, or your ranch, harvest your crop of beans, and then go to Eugene's rents and harvests his peas, whatever thing, and charge a fee for harvesting it for him. But he had a payment. Well, he paid cash for all his stuff. But, expenses got too much besides handling his own ranches and everything else. It got to be too much for him. So he finally, he didn't want to give up, but young, I think, finally inveigled him. Well, this is a losing proposition.
Was this after he returned from China? Or
no, that's in the 20s you're talking about.
In the
20s,
30s.
Yeah,
okay,
that's
29, 30.
Let me see. What were the, some of the companies that your father dealt with? Did he deal with some wholesalers in Los Angeles or Southern California?
National Farms.
National Farms.
Burr PC Company. That was the biggest in the world. Aguilar Musser, San Francisco area. I have invoices where he was shipping out about 15,000 pounds of potatoes received to San Francisco. He had this fellow, Royal Grandy, pick him up at his ranch to ship out. I got a bill of ladings for all that stuff that he shipped out. San Francisco, Los Angeles, big firm, big seed firm. And he was the first flower seed grower in this whole, on the West Coast, I think, back in those days. You know. Nobody was doing it. He had the know-how. He hired an awful lot of Mexican labor, but besides these Chinese. Chinese were used for cooking in the ranches, which, for his own ranches, plus people would call up for him. Cooks or roustabouts in there on the ranches because they knew the Chinese would stay. When the ranchers hired Caucasians, Saturdays the fellows would go to town and sometimes they don't come back for work on the following Monday because they get drunk.
Yeah.
But the Chinese had nothing, that they had no, they didn't socialize as much as the others, so they were always on hand there and they would work. Not just the 8 hour or 10 hour, they do it the 24 hour deal for the Chinese, and the employers like that.
That goes back into something we're looking at. What kinds of social activities did these workers all around the farms have? Did they have dances to go to? We hear that there was some gambling.
That was, dances were out of the question. Because there weren't that many Chinese around. Well, actually, there weren't that many dances in the evening, but the dances were mostly social club and so forth. And,
did you have New Year celebrations?
Well, yeah, the Chinese were very strong on that. That's about the one big thing they had to look forward to during the period of the year. And regardless of how much money they had in their pocket, they would always save up enough for this big festive occasion. That's a big thing with the Chinese at that time. We all look forward to the Chinese New Year, especially as kids. Those days, they used to get the lishi wood, wrap up in red paper.
Right.
It wasn't a dime and quarter, it was gold pieces.
Yeah. fives and twenties.
Oh, yeah. Ones, two and a half, five.
Yeah, two and a half with a Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
Really.
Did some of the Chinese belong to associations or tongs?
Around here, we didn't have affiliation with the tong too much. There was the On Leong and the Bing Kong.
The Bing Kong tong?
Yeah, and the other one, that big one, the Tapsing.
Tapsing.
Yeah, those two were very big in San Luis. Amongst the other members of our community, Chinese community. And
one thing we know that the Tongs and the family associations functionaries were as banks for some of the Chinese. Was that true?
Some of what?
That they act as banks or financial.
Oh, aid. Well, yeah, it's a benevolent association, they called it.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you were in dire straits, you go to the association, they would take care of you. They would never ask the put cash in the Association of Welfare, such as it was. There wasn't any welfare. They would never go to put cash in for help. Our Chinese always took care of our own money, regardless.
The Chinese never put their money into American banks then? Or
oh yeah, that part. Oh yeah, that part. Yeah, but that was the thing to do. All right. My father had, well, the bank, my father was a banker of a sort, because these workers, the Chinese workers, wouldn't trust the cash in banks. That's when my father came in and said, in Alfio, these workers would be out in the field and the money would go into their account, which was held by my father. And my father would say, like you would say, well, every month send some money back to my family in China, and my father would take care of that end of it. But these fellows are still out on the farm working. They had no time to come in off the job, because transportation wasn't as such that you could do that. So they would have my father say, well, you do send such and such amount to my family in China, just periodically, and my father would handle all that part too.
So he was a banking agent,
more
or less.
Right. And they trusted him. I've never heard of anything underhanded that he did. He always gave 100%.
You know that in some places, Chinese could not own property. Was there a problem in the town here, or were there any rules like that around here?
You have to be an American born to own property after a certain, in the 1890s, I believe, to pass that act. The Japanese, you know, couldn't own any property until in the 30s, 40s.
46, we voted that in after the war.
46,
that the any alien could not own any property. Because
mm-hmm.
I was on a farm down in
they couldn't buy it. Where my dad had it, I think it was okay for him to hang on to it. But
so
he didn't have to give it up.
Did he, in other words, then try to help some people to, some of these men to acquire property by buying it in his name and then at a later time turning it over?
I think they wanted him to do that. But he wouldn't do that underhandedly. He wouldn't go to the same for that. He wouldn't go for that.
See, a lot of that would have been leased land too, right?
Yeah, he did. He leased a lot. He leased from people.
Mm.
He leased a few ranches from people. Because especially World War One, we couldn't get sugar cane. Sugar. And
stop here.
Now, in this area, not too far from here, the early days, the Chinese did a lot of fishing industry and gathering kelp. Did you have any idea of that? Heard any of the old timers?
Yes, about up in the Marbay, Cayucas, and Cambria area, where the Chinese they used to gather seaweed and dry abalone to ship back to China. And they would gather it about every 3 to 6 months. They would come in and have my father ship it north, San Francisco, and over to China. They packed it up in bales. They put them up in squares. After they cut the seaweed, they would put them up in about 24 by 24 inch crates,
mm-hmm.
about 4 inches deep, and let that dry down. And then they would bale that.
In sacks?
Just like cotton.
Oh.
Bind it up, sew it up in gunny sacks, and then it was shipped to China that way. Now, that's interesting. Gathering kelp was a real science for those fellows. They used to have to scrape a rock off clear. Clean off the rock at low tide, and then they would use a blowtorch to get rid of all the sea life on this one rock, on these rocks. And then the sea would start growing again on this one rock, you see. And in time, as the seaweed grew up to harvesting time, they had it all licked. They didn't have to pick up the seashells and the clams and the... And,
so they actually cultivated it.
That's a cultivated. Yes.
How long is that, a yearly process or?
That's an all year round thing.
Oh.
And at the real low tide, they would go out there and gather the abalones along with the kelp. So while they're waiting for the kelp to grow, they would go out and gather the abalones, take them out of the shell and set them out on the ground or hang them up to dry. Mm-hmm. These 24 by 24 inch crates were laid out on the ground to dry in these crates. And after they dried up to a point where they could remove the crate without the kelp would adhere to itself. See? So it was just like so many pillows that they stitched together.
Now where did these fellows live?
Oh, they built their own little shacks out there, abalone shacks. I mean, seaweed gatherers' houses. Now they're, as far as women concerned, the seaweed gatherers had no women. They weren't allowed to bring in women, you know, as you know, in the early days. So when they did, some men would go back to China and bring back a wife to help them out, you see. Mm-hmm. But these women would go stir crazy out there. Really stuck out there, you know, just gathering seaweed day after day and no communication with the outside world. So some of them ended up in insane asylum. These women just went bananas out there.
How long did that period last?
I think the last fellow, Lo Wong, incidentally, his son was born out there. His name was Harding Wong.
Harding.
Named after Harding, Wong. General, President Harding. That was when this boy was born, the last one, the second generation. See? And without he was supposed to, he went to the grammar schools here and all. But the father wanted him to stay on the seaweed farm, you know. Yeah, then he said, that's not for me. So his father, the last one to leave this area, which I was going back about 20 years ago.
It was
15, 20 years is the last seaweed gatherer left.
As recent as that?
Yes, sir. Uh-huh. He was a real diehard. This fellow father would never leave. He was together.
Well, 20 years, that was about 62, right?
Yeah. But the market went out, see. After the war with Japan, we couldn't ship it over, see. So the seaweed gatherers said, well, we can't live on nothing here, so we have to find something else to do. That's why they left, see.
Can you recall some other names?
Out there? Well, I'll tell you, they were 95% Hyung San, and we didn't speak that dialect at all. I mean, the average Chinese down here. Yeah, it was too foreign for us. We couldn't converse with those fellows.
That was the probably the people that settled up around Lock area, Zhongshan.
You think there are hills on up there?
Yeah.
They are.
So at its peak, do you think how many were there out there? How many were there?
Well, I imagine about a little settlements, you know. I'd say about clusters, about 10 guys here, 10 guys there, 10 guys there.
Time was during what years?
Well, at the winter months are the lowest tides of the year, the minus tides, and it's like a -1.6, and it gets down to 1.5 the following day, and at that time, you can go out furthest. That only occurs in summer and winter. There's one week and it goes way out, but that. The average tide that he could get out only once a year, see.
Mm.
When that tide comes in and out, you gotta move fast, see. So these guys is lining up. This we're gonna do when this as they start work tide will start working out. They work on the rocks until it gets way out there.
Mm.
And some of them have gotten caught out there, you know, in the seaweed.
What were the particular points along the coast that they worked at?
Like in the
Port
Sandals. More, no, not so much. Imports on that did come into picture. But the tide didn't go down too low over there because it was pretty steep then. We're in Morro and Cayucos de Cambria, it's a sloping beach. The rocks were exposed more.
And Cayucos de Cambria?
Yeah, that's a big area.
Cambria is one of, around there, there was.
I think maybe this shack is still visible.
Are they on the bluffs above the
there,
beach?
Well, they go down into a canyon. See, the men that build down into a canyon to be protected from the elements. I mean, the wind is so.
They were basically just little one-room shacks.
Well, some of them would be bigger than that, because they had to warehouse it more or less. They had to build a shed north, and it would be adjacent to the house. Be a long house. But they'd build in this little ravine, and the rocks would be, rocks in there where they could lay the seaweed on for drying, expedite drying period, see, by the heat up on the rocks. Yeah, that's very interesting to see that operation. We go out there and we tell the guy, well, we're coming back next week. We want some abalone and seaweed, but he'd give us second seaweed. But we get abalone and crabs. And he had them all waiting for us there because he went out of the low tides, see, to get the abalone.
How about other forms of fishing? Abalone or shrimp? Or
no shrimp down this far.
Salmon?
No, that salmon didn't come down to very recent years this far south. And that's too far out. These men didn't have boats. Rowboat, perhaps, but for big, you know, launches and larger fishing vessels, they weren't into that.
So during your time?
Like, let's say rock cod, they catch them off the rocks. Yeah, rock fish where you could get, they could get it. Crab wellie, and the crab canneries as such. Never heard of them.
So during your time, there weren't any real fishermen down in this area.
As such, no. Outside of, you know, but not fish market. That's all. That's all we had. Yeah. In those days, you had no transportation to get them out of here. But before they'd perish, I mean, they'd be, you know, they're too perishable on a ship. We didn't have any. We had to go by. Horse and buggy that I'm talking about now. It wasn't until later that fish canneries in Monterey would handle it, but it was so much entailed getting it fish from here up to there wouldn't warrant it. Like rock cod, we could buy for 10 cents a pound, a guy delivered the front door. Rock cod smelt for 10 cents a pound. Hey.
I guess your biggest fishing industry around up in Monterey, right?
Used to be very big.
Yeah, the Chinese
fish just disappeared. I think from down the pollution. Like in Japan, they have to go way up to get fish now from down the pollution.
In relation to, and this is you're going in another direction. In relation to San Luis Obispo, did the Chinese get into any other kinds of business where they, besides agriculture, where they became very heavily involved or came to dominate?
No, there wasn't that much here.
Was there any industry?
Primarily an agricultural area and dairying. They were not in.
They were not in dairying?
No way, you know. Chinese don't drink milk. All this coastline here is to be owned all by Swiss people. They're dairy people, you know. Dairy, butter making, this creamery up there in Harmony right now. It's just bought by two LA people.
Right.
That's been changing hands quite
rapidly. Right about that. Did the Chinese also have the opportunity to travel in and out from here to Southern California? Did they go to LA often to visit relatives?
Once in a great while, these fellows, living around here, it was a 24-hour day, 7 days a week idea. But for somebody to take over the chores, there was nobody to, you couldn't call up
a substitute.
You couldn't call up an employment, and you'd have a man come out. They'd have to work through my father to get them somebody who's temporarily out of work at this farm. When you get find somebody free, send him up to my place so I can take a few days off. Now, just transportation wasn't as such like we have today, where you be in San Francisco for an hour or two. But I mean, as a matter of day, to get to San Francisco and back, it's a one-day trip both ways, each way. That by car, horse and buggy, now you're going, you're talking, let's say 240 miles, about 10, 20, 15. And about 1 week by horse and buggy each way.
Well, the easiest way was to go by ship, and that takes about a day.
Yeah, that was. They had to go to Port San Luis. That was Port San Luis, the Avila Beach there was the port on the coast there from San Francisco to L.A. There's San Francisco, Port San Luis, Santa Barbara, and then L.A., then San Diego. That was it. You get on a boat here. They didn't take the boats too much.
If they was averaging 10 knots, that means in 250 miles they could make it a day, overnight.
Was there much railroad work done during your time?
See, after the, or my time, up to 1980, the SP was running big. Well, they had a roundhouse there where the trains from L.A. met here. L.A. met here with the Frisco trains. Mm-hmm. And they would just end here and be maintained here, serviced, and they'd go back on the rings again.
But the Chinese were not involved in the service?
Not too much. Only one they worked on there was but outside of laying the track back in the 90s, you know, 80s and 90s, and the 1900s, by the day, they didn't work on a rural train outside of being cooks on the trains. My father supplied a lot of cooks.
Would they oftentimes then stop in and visit your father?
Yes, they did. Like this would be the end of the run from L.A. And the end of the run from Frisco. They stop over a few days and take a few days off or have to go back on again.
Did you have accommodations for them?
Next door to our store, Father built a two-story building, rooms.
Uh-huh.
So, itinerant workers, why they would stop over in between jobs when they stopped there.
Yeah.
They had a community kitchen in the back, you know, when all the Chinese did their own cooking.
Yeah, this was a kind of stop-off point, where they changed crews and things like that.
Yeah, it was quite an ordeal in those days, you know. We're talking about, it used to be about a 12-hour trip from L.A. to here. It wasn't until the daylight limited came in, but when they cut it down to 6 hours. So it used to be quite a long run. And that was a full day job. They used to have a stoker with coal and firewood, you know. They got enough steam for the locomotives to run. There was no diesel in those days.
With your brother being a projectionist at a local theater, did the Chinese tend to attend that theater? Did they go to the movies?
Oh, they went to movies. Yeah, that's about the only recreation, because outside of gambling, what did you do? So they took the movies quite a bit. Recreation as such, it wasn't the thing here. Lottery and
I imagine your family also then went to the movies too. You and your brothers and sisters?
Well, my brother, brother Fred, during high school, Poly days, Cal Poly, and it was because of the high school in the old days. And I went to high school here. Young taught us both how to run the movie, work as a projectionist. We were here when the transition from silent movies to talkies came in. And my brother, there were three theaters here then. Alamo Theater, Obispo, and Monterey Theater, the three of them. Fremont came later. My brother, young, taught me how to run the movies when I was in high school. And I worked weekends, and after I left high school, I worked 1 or 2 years before I went on to college to get enough money to go to college. And then, the life expectancy of a projectionist of 55 years of age, that was the cutoff point. Ordinarily, because you were locked in this airtight booth, and they were, you had to breathe all this carbon dust in the air. You know, men would die of black lung at the age of 55, you see. But right, when I heard that, and I'm watching, looking at those bright carbon lights in the machine, to produce the light to throw this image from the little 35 millimeter down the screen, you know, from 100 foot away, it toughened your eyesight. So I said, well, I better get out of this. I want to live a little longer than 55. I quit 55 years ago. The young is still running them. Freddie thought the same thing, so he went out. He took off to Chicago. He worked in the restaurant there in Chicago and went to the University of Chicago at the same time because my sister needed his help in Chicago. He went back there. But we quit a long time ago, God, and young is still going.
Yeah.
They have, well, the health and sanitation got after the movie industry to take care of the people in the booth. Was a good thing. They have vents now, you know, forced air and all that stuff now.
Mm. Did you kids learn any Chinese games like mahjong or fan tan?
My father would never let us